Hi, this is Jamie Ruby, and welcome to Fandom Access for Tuesday, October 15th. Let me bring in...
Hello!
Hello. Hey, Karen.
Hi, Jamie.
Hey, I have got... My voice has gotten worse since last week, so if I start coughing, that's why.
You sound a little bit deeper voice than usual.
Yeah. I sound, like at the press tour, I sounded like I did on the set, like a frog.
Yeah.
Let me bring AJ in.
Hello.
All right, there we go. Hi. So, as I put on the description, we will take the first hour to do Walking Dead and then add some whatever time we have left at the end. We can start talking about other shows. And then at the top of the second half of the hour, I'll talk a bit about the press tour. That way people know if that's what they're listening for. They know when to tune in that way. All right?
All right.
So... Finally, it's back. What
yeah.
did you guys think of it, though, is the question.
You know what? I think season premieres are a setup episode, and this was setting up the next 15 episodes for the rest of the season, right? And this was an
mm-hmm.
establishing episode that showed us what happened in the 6 or 7 months we left off and how the characters have changed, and a lot of them have changed. I thought it was, you know, it was okay. It wasn't like, you know, going to go down as one of the greatest episodes, but it didn't suck. It was establishing.
Wait, AJ got muted again somehow. Oh, somehow AJ got muted. Hold on, let me, there, you're unmuted again.
I didn't know I was muted.
Something happened.
I didn't hate the episode. I felt there were some problems with it. Specifically, Rick. Oh, what the hell was that storyline? That was just dumb.
Yeah, we're not sure.
We get it. He's still screwed up in the head. He's trying to come back from it to the point where he's not even carrying a gun. You know, they've made the council like they did in the similar to what they did in the comic books. I mean, his storyline was just stupid. I mean, we saw danger coming a mile away with that crazy woman.
Yes.
I don't understand.
She reminded
what
me of
Danielle,
though.
Yeah, that was... That's funny.
I don't know if you guys watch Talking Dead, but I felt the same way Chris Hardwick did. For a second, I was like, she looks like a zombie. And then I was like, wait, can zombies talk? Wait, what's going on? And it took me a minute to be like, what the hell's going on? Oh, she's like a person, but kind of...
Crazy.
Dirty
she did
crazy.
A weird makeup job.
I mean, she looked
yeah.
borderline zombie, didn't she, with her gaunt
yeah,
features and gray skin?
Yeah, well, I think...
I mean... Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Well, no, I was just going to say, my main problem with this episode, I think if they had put the first two episodes together, maybe it would have been better, but it seems like the whole episode moves so slow. And I get that they're going to set it up and then they're going to screw them all over. You know, they're showing they've been fine and nothing's been going on. But I felt that it was too slow. And there were quite a few things, actually, I found I had problems with. But most of all, I just want to mention now, because I'm assuming you guys probably felt the same. But what was with all the relationships? That was so annoying. Like, everybody's having
actually,
sex.
Actually, I caught that.
Everybody's
actually,
coupled up.
Yes, I was annoyed
you
by that.
You know what, though? I understood it because... They didn't give us a time frame, but they've obviously been in the prison thriving for a good chunk of time now. So I understood it. I mean, Beth was the most obvious one to finally get a boyfriend because she's a teenager and, you know.
Yeah, her
teenager, you know, that makes sense, you know. Tyrese and that girl, I don't know who, well, I didn't catch her name. You know,
Karen,
it makes sense.
Karen, her name is Karen.
Yeah, her name's Karen.
I totally missed it. No, I totally missed it. Whenever they said her name, I must have not paying attention for a second. The thing I did think was funny is Carol still flirting with Daryl. And it's funny, though. His look has changed. Like, he used to find it humorous. The look I felt from him Sunday night was kind of like, all right, give it a rest already. It's never going to happen.
Well, I took it. I don't know. See, I think if they were going to do something with them, they should have showed it. But I think I took it. They're already sleeping together. I mean, she called him poopy.
Yeah,
that was, like, so annoying.
I don't think they are. I think she's just messing with him.
I don't know.
Really?
I
see, I thought it was to say they're together, too. It was just kind of showing you. That's
it was poorly done then.
No,
it was annoying, whatever
it was. Ambiguous. I'm kind of, you know, kind of with Jamie at some points I wasn't sure, and then some points I thought she was messing with him, and some points she's teasing him because he's just, like, turning into a nice person. But I think it's ambiguous at this point. Clearly they're very close.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've been together, you know, they've been friends for a long time now, so.
I don't know. Maybe they have slept together or not. I was, you know, I'm interested like Jamie, I was like, what is this? Everybody's all coupled off, and that's kind of annoying. We knew Beth's boyfriend was kind of going to bite the dust. I'm interested in Tyrese and Karen because, you know, Tyrese is very different than the Tyrese in the comics at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, this Tyrese doesn't like to kill, and not that comics Tyrese likes to kill, but he's a good fighter, and doesn't shy away from killing zombies at all. But so in the comic book, there was a storyline where Carol and Tyrese are together, and Tyrese cheats on her with Michonne, and she goes crazy and tries to get in a threesome with Rick and Lori.
okay.
And
it was hilarious.
And then she commits suicide.
My question is, that's really weird.
But you've got to say it the right way, Karen. She commits suicide by zombie.
She does.
They had a doctor in town who wanted to research the zombies, kind of similar to what Milton did last season. And they had the zombie chained up, and after Carol had been rejected by pretty much everybody, she walked up to the zombie and just hugged the zombie, and the zombie devoured her. It was awesome.
It's very cool, but it's clear that in the television program...
It doesn't mean that's going to happen, yeah, that would be
the character of Carol is very different.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see this Carol ever, like... Well, first of all, she can't get a threesome with Lori at this point, but also I don't see her becoming fragile
what's
right now, and I'm wondering if Tyrese and his girlfriend Karen are destined for some kind of drama similar to or whatever, how that played out in the book. I don't know. This show has not really played so much with the exception of Maggie, you know, Rick's marriage, Rick and Lori and Shane, I guess. But the show doesn't really dwell on personal relationships like that. Like, there's not a...
Right.
Not that the comic book has a soap opera aspect, but the comic book does have a little bit more of, like, of how they form relationships and whatever than maybe the show does. And so I'm just wondering, you know, what any of this is setting up or... I don't know. Maybe nothing. Maybe it's just showing... You know, I did think this episode was really kind of showing us how they've reached a new normal... And they've gotten really settled in, which is dangerous. It's almost like a Woodbury-type situation where everything's really nice and easy in the prison, and people seem happy and settled in. And that's kind of what you thought Woodbury was when we first went there. Like, it seemed like this really great, safe place where everybody was settled in, right?
Well, the big difference between the prison and Woodbury is nobody has this false sense of security at the prison. You know, they all realize how dangerous
nobody
things
has
are. You know, they
a
have
a bank of zombie heads. That would be
like, you know, they're not.
Rick
well,
nobody
has
the little kids. But
yeah,
if he's going out without a gun, he has a false sense of security.
No, Rick.
Yeah.
No, I don't think.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call that with Rick a false sense of security. You know, I mean, he says to her, she's like, I have my knife.
I think he thinks,
you know,
he doesn't need the gun more
I
than
think,
anything. But
yeah,
he's
Rick.
Trying to teach his son something.
There's a mental thing with Rick and the gun. Whatever, you know, I don't quite understand exactly what they're doing with Rick at the moment. But I got to say, without the scene in the store, yeah, the episode, I mean, if you take away that scene, that episode is boring as hell.
Yeah.
That was the only uplifting part of the entire episode. I thought that was great, falling zombies.
Yeah,
that was funny.
I totally love that scene. But I gotta say, I was surprised that Beth's boyfriend bit the dust because he's not, you know, famous, I wouldn't say, but he's fairly well known actor. So I was kind of surprised to see them.
Who, Beth's
you know,
boyfriend?
So
I can't think of his name. He was on Veronica Mars, and he was on Smallville.
Well, Nerdy Patrick is on Phineas and Ferb, and he died in only one episode also.
What the hell is he
doing
here?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, according to I only know from Chris Hardwick that he's the voice of Phineas on Phineas and Ferb.
All right, well, that doesn't exactly... he's like my first live action acting gig, and they kill me in the first episode.
Dude, it's on The Walking Dead. He's still got a first good acting gig, whether he died in 5 seconds.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry, go ahead.
And probably one of my other favorite scenes was Beth. You know, she is so withdrawn from everything. You know, she's like, you know, whatever, I'm just glad I had a chance. You know, like, she's got a very positive outlook on it. It's like, you know, people die, we live in a fucked up world, and this is how it is. But then she walks over, and she has that sign of 30 days accident free, and she takes down the three. That was great. I thought it was so cool that they did that.
Got to start over.
It was cool, but also scary that she's so kind of cavalier. You know?
Well, yeah.
Kind of like, is she totally sane, or is she just, you don't know if that's how she's dealing with it, or if she can't deal with it, you know?
I kind of feel like, given what we just saw of Beth, and obviously it's the first episode, it's very early on, given the growth we've seen from her character, I got to say, if this was Lost, she's dead this season. Because she is very cavalier, and I could totally see her, you know, just being like walking up, you know, they overrun by the zombies or whatever ends up happening, and I could just see her going into the, you know, pack of zombies, being like, all right, well, I'm screwed anyway, and just taking out as many as she can, type of thing, and being okay with it. I could totally see that being something similar to that. I could totally see that being a death for her.
I feel two ways about what we saw with Beth, and I'm not sure if they contradict or complement each other, but Beth has always been, like, a fatalistic character. Beth tried to commit suicide when we first met Beth.
Yes.
Remember, she was, like, going to kill herself because there was no point in living and blah, blah, blah. And she's always been sort of fatalistic. And this idea that, like, I just don't even, like, cry anymore, get attached to people anymore because it's, you know, everybody dies or whatever, is a very sort of, in some ways, it's sad and fatalistic.
But it is scary to be at that point.
Yeah, I also felt like the episode between her and what we saw with Carl and the other kids and whatever, and even like what we saw with Carl last year and stuff, you know, I think this show has something to say about how different it is for people who are raised during the apocalypse and what it means to be a kid versus what it means to be adult. You know, the kids almost adapt better and take it in stride, and they're like, yeah, well, my boyfriend died, whatever, I don't even like say goodbye anymore. And like the way the kids react is so different sometimes than the adults. And is that better or worse or just different? But I feel like the show sometimes is...
Yeah, and I like the differences between Carl and the other kids because, you know, they're standing by the fence and Carl's like, you guys just don't get it, you know? It's, you know, Carl's been in the thick of it. I mean, he had to shoot his own mother last season.
I took that a little differently, and I don't know what you thought about it, Jamie, about that scene, but I thought that scene was... Clearly, you know, Carl has named the pig, and Rick is like, don't name the pig. The pig is not a pet. It's not, you know, your friend. It's food or whatever. And then, you know, the next time we see Carl, he's telling these little kids, don't name the zombies. They're not your pets. They're not, you know, I thought to a certain extent they were showing us the way where Carl has regained some respect for his father and is starting to.
Yeah.
There was a time when he, whatever Rick said, he would be like, whatever, you're crazy, I'm doing the opposite, or I do what I want, or actually the last time we saw Carl after he shot that kid in the face and was like, I do what I gotta do. And I thought maybe there was a part of what they were showing us in this was where Carl, like, he likes his dad again, and he listens to his dad, and he's almost parroting what his father just said to him.
Right. I almost feel, though, too, that scene was also to show how much he's grown because of what's going on, in the sense that, like, he seems really out of place. Like, even though he's not older than them, he seems much older than them. Like, they're playing kids' games type of thing, and he's not one of them anymore type of thing.
Good call.
Right.
Yeah,
sort of
he has nothing in common with those other kids.
I guess I didn't say it very well before, but that's kind of what I was getting at, you know. Carl's different than them. You know, he's grown up in the thick of the battle where these kids seem like they've been a lot, you know, they were in Woodbury. They were sheltered. They, you know, had no concept of what was really going on. But I, after that, though, I thought the scene with Carol where the other adult is there, and she's, like, reading story time. And as soon as he walks away, she's like, all right, kids, today we're going to learn how to hold a knife. And I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Which they need to teach them, especially the ones from Woodbury, because they don't know crap.
And I want to know, and I'm curious to know why they, why other people think it's a bad idea. You know, I mean, Carol has the I'm sure Carol's not the only one that has the foresight, to teach these kids. And, I mean, obviously Rick is on, I don't know what kick Rick is on, because, she says to Carl, she's like, please don't tell your dad, So, of course, he's going to tell his dad, Rick's going to lose his mind.
I mean, I think the reason that she doesn't want Rick to know is, Rick has really changed. All of last season, Rick was like, we can't trust other people. We have to kill people. We have to do this and that. And Rick saw what his son was becoming. And so, and we talked a lot last season about, Lori's greatest fear was, how Carl would be affected. And I think Rick has become sort of a, maybe not a pacifist, but I think Rick is trying to, has changed a lot to sort of stop his son from growing up to be this, stone cold killer. I think part of the reason Carol wants to teach these kids, Carol's the only character that we know really well who lost her child to the zombies.
Yeah.
Right.
And if she had been able to fight, maybe she wouldn't have, I think, at the point.
Rick has a healthy two healthy children and a new child since the apocalypse. And Carol's daughter was turned into a zombie. And, maybe if Sophia knew how to use a knife or wasn't totally annoying, she'd be alive right now. So I could see maybe why to Carol, it's more important. But I think certainly, Daryl would probably back her in teaching the kids.
Oh, yeah.
If Andrew or Shane were alive, they would. I wonder if even Herschel would. Glenn would.
Well, we
Herschel,
know, Rick may be the only one they're lying to. I mean, we don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, I think Herschel actually is an interesting one because I think he would contradict himself in the same sentence, They're kids, let them be kids. Just make sure make sure if they come into the situation that they make sure the zombie city is down. Herschel would argue it, but in the same breath, he would know that it's necessary. He's practical.
Yeah. No, I gotta say the one thing. Sorry, go ahead, because mine's completely off the topic.
Go.
I've been waiting to start. Well, I was gonna say the one thing that really annoyed me though about the whole thing that I just don't get the point of. I mean, I get the point of it's showing how Rick's changed, but I'm not understanding why they chose to do that. I think it was dumb. Was the whole thing with the crazy woman in the woods. I get that he supposedly felt bad for her and everything, but I don't understand the process of not killing her, because even if he feels bad for her, that's another zombie
that
he can kill another person that he cares about. I mean, that part... I get if he didn't kill the head, because it really couldn't do a whole lot. But
which, by the way,
I didn't even see the head. I only knew that because of The Talking Dead. I was looking at the crate. I didn't even know what it was. I thought it was like a baby or something, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Well, you never saw it. It's just not large enough to be like a full. We don't really know. But I love it.
Well, I guess
that
they showed the
Eddie?
Face when Rick was walking away. I don't know. I didn't see it.
His name was Eddie, and Chris Harbert called him Hitty.
Yeah, that was funny. But the point is, I mean, I get, the head can't really, I mean, if you get killed by a zombie head, it's either you're really stupid or you're like me and you're clumsy and trip over everything. But other than that, but she can kill people. And, every zombie is somebody that can hurt somebody you care about. So I do not at all understand not killing her, whether he felt bad for her or not. Besides, most people wouldn't want to turn into a zombie. She wasn't even in her right mind. So that irritated me. The other thing, and this is just a little nitpick, but I don't know. I thought it was dumb. I guess maybe my opinion is they probably don't want to pay to keep doing the special effects. But Herschel's leg annoyed me because suddenly he supposedly finds like a prosthetic leg, right? So he doesn't have to be on crutches and everything else anymore. But the fact of the matter is there's no way that he could find somebody else's leg that fits him so well. He doesn't need crutches, doesn't limp. I don't know, but that was just a little nitpick that kind of irritated me. I didn't even know that they showed the new one until they talked about it after. But
honestly, I actually felt like, and it looked to me like they kind of made it themselves for him. Like they, it didn't look like a typical prosthetic leg. It looked like something they made.
Well, and I, I'm with you guys. I didn't really notice it until they pointed it out on Talking Dead.
No, I noticed that he was walking normal. I just didn't see. I guess they showed his leg sitting there. That part I didn't see. I missed.
Well, they eventually showed a close-up. And Scott Gimple, who writes the show, you know, is the showrunner, he explained, wasn't it he who explained it, that that it's a leg that they found on one of their runs, and they scavenged from somewhere.
So
right, but
it
would not fit him.
Well, they could have adjusted it.
Not enough that he wouldn't limp and stuff.
They could have adjusted it.
To raid an entire prosthetic store. You're right, those things need to be fitted to custom fitted, and, you know, they...
Yeah, I actually had a discussion with my one physical therapist today when I was up there about this, talking about it.
But, you know, it is also true that, like, not in the United States, like, there are other countries that don't have technology like we do, where you go to the shop and they have 10 different kinds of legs, and you take the one they have and you make it work.
Right.
I just don't think
that he would be not limping and stuff. I think they just didn't want to do it anymore.
I think you're right. He wouldn't walk as well as he walks. But, you know, it was cool to see on Talking Dead how they did that effect. They buried his leg in the dirt so you couldn't see his actual functioning leg, and then, like, attached the, you know, prop leg laying on the ground there like that.
That was interesting.
Cool.
I don't know. I just noticed he could walk perfectly, and then I'm like, what the heck? And then when I saw Talking Dead, they talked about it. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
So he got a leg I missed seeing about.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That was just a little nitpick, but it was something that I noticed right away when he was walking. I'm like, why is he not limping? Why is he not on crutches?
Yeah. So we're agreed that we're not crazy about new farmer pacifist Rick. And I don't think any of us believe that can last long, right? That Rick will be called out of retirement to defend them in some way, probably very soon. I didn't mind New Carl. You know, New Carl is like, I mean, how far could they go with this idea of Carl becoming, like, you know, like a messed up cold killer? I mean, they dialed Carl back a bit, which doesn't really bother me that much. And the whole thing with Carl, like, not respecting his father and all that, they had gone maybe as far as they could with that, right?
I think something's going to have to happen, I think, to pull Rick out of his funk.
Kill the baby, kill the baby. Okay. Sorry.
We all heard that.
No, I knew Dad on the line.
I just get
so annoyed by babies on TV.
I know you do, but you know what? I wasn't going to say it, but Jamie said what I was thinking.
Well, no, it's just a plot device. It's only there when they need it, and then they put it in the drawer, and you never see it again. And if it was in the show all the time, I wouldn't care. But that really annoys me when they do it. It's like they only pull it out when it's needed. And a baby doesn't do that. You know, you can't just put it away for a while. So,
especially not on this show.
Yeah.
So,
what do you guys – okay, so Maggie and Glenn. I mean, I knew immediately they showed the two of them in bed, and Glenn says, you don't have to go on the run, you can stay home, and they don't show Maggie below the shoulders. I was like, oh, my God, she's pregnant. She's totally pregnant. And I'm interested in Jamie. I'll wait for you, AJ, because I know you read the comics, but did that surprise you, Jamie, or did you think from the jump that she was pregnant?
You know, honestly, I didn't think it through that much when he told her not to go. I thought he was just being overprotective. I really didn't think about it that way. I mean, obviously, after they talked about it, she wasn't pregnant. I don't understand this, that she could get pregnant and be okay with it. I don't know. I mean, I get that, yeah, you have to live and everything, but that I would not want to bring a baby into that world. I don't care what. I would never want to do that, and I don't understand the thought behind that, but that's just my opinion.
I agree that I probably would not want to bring a baby into that situation, but I totally get her point of view. I totally get it. Because
no, I understand.
I just can't get on board with it. You know, because, I mean, look what they have accomplished. And granted, I would say it, no more, I'd say, what, maybe 3 to 6 months have passed since the season finale,
they
I
said,
would think.
They said six months. Gimple said 6 to 7 on Talking Dead.
6 to 7. Okay, yeah. Well, so, all right. So that's,
but
yeah.
Winter's over, right? They always skip the winter.
True. So they've been there for a while. Things are going good. You know, people are still dying here and there, but it's not like it was. You know, Judith is thriving. So I can kind of, you know, I mean, regardless of the situation, her biological clock is ticking. You know what I mean? So I could totally understand her thoughts process behind it. I don't know if it's because, I mean, I've, for the most part, separated the comic from the TV show because they're two separate entities aside from, you know, familiar characters and familiar things that have happened.
But I just thought, you know, AJ, that at this point in the comic books, while they're living in the prison, Maggie does a lot of talking about how she wants to get pregnant. And Glenn is like, you know, whatever. Maggie's like, Maggie and Glenn are actually, in the comic books, they have sex like nonstop and they're trying to get pregnant, right?
Compared to well, in the comics, like the time frame, they're not even in the prison anymore. You know,
yeah.
And I want them to move on. I need them to move in the prison. We had spent an entire season there. Let's move on.
I think they will this season. But so as for Maggie's attitude, like, you know, when Maggie was like, look, we're breathing, but we're not living or whatever, you know, I thought that she's similar to Rick, where Rick had said, like, you know, we are the future. Like, maybe he said in the previous, I watched the season finale right before the season premiere came on, so hope I'm not running it together. But there's a scene where Rick says, like, you know, we can only get through this together, and we, you know, Carl and Judy together in our community. Yeah, basically. But, you know, Rick kind of felt like, I guess in the season finale when he made that speech, the only reason to keep surviving is so that they can be a community and have a normal life and try to, like, go on and have kids and whatever, right? Like, you don't just survive just to try to survive and eventually die. Like, Rick...
I guess at this point now they plan on settling down at the prison, so I guess it's as good a time as any in that sense.
Yeah, but, you know, Rick sort of, Maggie's on the same page as Rick in a sense, that we have to, you know, try to live a life, or, like, I don't know, or these zombies win, but I felt like she and Rick, she's a little, okay, she's not totally, like, pacifist, you know, and crazy like Rick is. And Rick is clearly crazy, and one thing that's missing here is that, not missing, but would be interesting to know, in the comic book, they form a committee to run the prison because they're like, Rick, you cannot be in charge anymore. We're sorry, dude. You're kicked out. We're forming a committee.
Well, Rick and Tyrese have that huge fight. Pretty much, they're both out of commission for like 2 or 3 days, and when Rick wakes up, they've formed a committee.
Yeah, but because basically Rick can't, you know. So, you know, it's unclear in this, for, you know, yet how that came about, but. Are you okay there, Jamie?
Yeah, I've been doing that all day, so that's why I said if I start doing that, sorry.
So, yeah, the committee's kind of interesting.
I'm glad they did that, though. I mean, they took a different route to get there, you know. I mean, it was pretty much emphasized with Carl last season telling his father, maybe you shouldn't be the leader anymore, you know. And now this season, here we go. We've got the committee, which I like the committee. I like that storyline, that idea. You know, granted, I hope, you know, I hope things start rocking and rolling again. I hope they don't spend too much time in the prison, and I hope, you know, they get out of the prison and get on their way.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, again, only compared to the comics, but comics, Rick never had the conversations with Lori until they left the prison. Because, well, in the comics, Lori died on their way out of the prison in the battle with the governor, which was totally different.
Yeah. So, new characters. I like Sasha. It's interesting that Tyrese, such a strong character in the comic book, is totally bossed around by his sister, and she appears to be the stronger and almost more prominent, you know, member of the group right now. And I do like her. She doesn't exist in the comic books, and I like Sasha.
Yeah, You know what I liked? She was giving the guy that was an army medic a hard time, and he ends up getting... And it's interesting what happens in the shop, in the store, because he gets pinned down. The zombies are coming all around him, and the kid that ends up dying because he's saving him. You know, so I thought that was kind of interesting. And you see that, that at the end of the episode, you could totally see it on his face that he realizes that kid died because of his stupidity.
And
because he had to try to steal alcohol.
So, and that character, that's Bob Stuckey, who's a character in the comics, and shout out to the actor Lawrence Gilliard, who's from Baltimore, lives in Baltimore, where I live, and was in The Wire. But Bob is a character in the comic books who's a pretty, you know, I mean, he should, I think we could expect him to take a more prominent role maybe in the next few episodes. And by the way, how much would it suck to be trying to, like, give up alcohol when the zombies take over?
Oh, yep, forget that.
The thing is, I think it's funny because it's like he decided to do the right thing and put it back. It's like if the dumbass had just taken it and stolen it, nothing that would have happened, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's like
he had to think about it
and put it back.
I totally think that is complete opposite of how shit would go. I think people would be drinking all the time.
Oh, that's true, too, yeah.
Well, you'd be drinking all the time if you did it,
but he's
an actual alcoholic and, you know, couldn't maybe function and survive. If, you know, there's a difference between, like, you know, when they all got drunk at the CDC versus, like, to what extent was he, you know. I mean, I don't know what how much. It's been, like, now 3 years since the zombies took over, right? So he should have really been off the booze for a while.
Well, he was in Woodbury and they had alcohol, so we don't know if he was drinking all day.
Yeah, has it been that long since the, it's been 3 years since the zombies? I lost track of time with the show.
Well, this is the fourth season. We've skipped three winters. This is our fourth. It opens
in
the summer.
Okay, yeah.
And we've
skipped
three winters. So I think that that it has been years. We're in our fourth season, and they don't track in real time, but we always skip the winter, right?
Yeah.
We've never seen a winter. So I think they're in their third or this is their fourth summer since the zombies took over.
Yeah.
By the way, AJ, there's a bunch of new characters coming this season, including some people from the comics, according to Talking Dead, according to Scott Gimple, including Abraham, which means they're probably leaving the prison this season. Which is fine. I don't think we expect them to spend another season on the same set, right? Like they have.
I'm kind of hoping they don't.
And I think this whole bit with Michonne. What do you guys think about Michonne? Like Michonne is still obsessed with the governor.
Yeah, she wasn't into it a whole lot though. I liked though how she killed that poster thing. That was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But the one thing that we didn't mention yet, which is what I've been waiting to mention, is about Patrick and the pig, for that matter. Is it airborne? Has he gotten the virus in a different way? I mean, obviously, this kid is getting sick and getting infected, and he isn't dead yet, and he turns into a zombie at the very end after he dies, but he was already getting sick. I mean, I guess it's possible since he didn't actually turn into a zombie until he completely died. Maybe it's not the same virus, but... Either way,
I want to know one thing.
Around.
I didn't understand why Patrick's face was all bloody.
Did you catch the zombie?
I thought it just
seemed
like a zombie at the end.
Yeah, I did.
In the opening part of it, there's a zombie who has those bloody eyes, and it's very clear, and I was like, oh, this is like, I think you're supposed to be like, this is a different kind of zombie, like, what's up? I mean, one thing that was notable also in this episode is that the zombies have changed their tactics, and Carol says the zombies don't spread out along the fence anymore, they all bunch up together, which makes them harder to kill, and I guess they could conceivably knock down the fence, right? If they
right. Well, that's the fear.
Yeah,
is that they're
all,
but
what
do so
you
say,
though, they showed a zombie at the beginning of the episode, though? I'm confused what you mean by that. They
because that zombie had the red bloody eyes. They totally
right.
zoom in on the zombie on the fence who has those same, like, blood red, bloodshot red eyes with blood dripping. And then at the end, Patrick, you know, keels over. As Nathan Fillion was on Talking Dead, as he pointed out, first Patrick coughs all over the water supply, and then he keels over, and he's got those same bloody eyes that we saw that zombie in the opening scene. And I think the
right.
implication is there a new form of zombieism coming, or a different way
but
of...
Also, right, but like I said, we don't technically know that whatever he had turned him into a zombie, because it could be a virus, and then he died, and he turned into a zombie. It's kind of
Well, yeah, that's what I think.
Unclear.
I think he died. I think he died and turned into
a
zombie.
A zombie virus, right?
Yeah, but
right,
he doesn't look like the other zombies. He looks like that one totally different zombie in the first scene. So
yes,
yeah,
I didn't notice
it.
I got to go back and rewatch.
But the thing that confused me was his whole face seemed bloody, and I didn't understand how his face got that bloody.
I don't know. I just thought they made him look like a zombie. I wasn't really, think about
it's
it.
It's like
think
a
about now, yeah,
fever,
he had
like in a Ebola type thing where you bleed out of the orifices of your
body.
Yeah,
probably.
You know, there's like all the blood vessels in his body are bursting or whatever, and he's bleeding out of his eyes and stuff. Or it's a brain aneurysm. Something is going on that's making him bleed out of
his head exploded. Who knows?
Eyes.
But anyway, he's going to go kill some people. That's all we need to know.
Well, yeah, now everybody's asleep and there's a zombie walking around, which is
It's definitely next episode's definitely gonna be interesting.
Yeah. I think that that they kinda have to do it. Now in the fourth season they've gotta find a way to
excuse me.
I hope Jane doesn't have a catcher cat.
No, I don't think.
But they have to find a way to step it up because once like the zombies have become sort of this thing that you can live with. The zombies are, like, sort of annoying, but not deadly if you don't let yourself get surrounded or whatever, right? Like, the zombies can be managed. So they've got to keep it up a notch to maintain attention on the show, and they've got to find a way to mix up the special effects and the makeup and kick that up a notch to keep us interested visually and not just, you know, looking at the same, you know. I mean, the Reign of Zombies was great, but as the zombies, you know, I mean, we've seen a lot of rotting zombies, and the work is incredible, but we need, you know, so I can see them, you know, that storyline, I mean, they're not doing it just in service of the makeup, but I can see how it would help to keep things interesting, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing about this show, though. The zombies aren't what keeps the show interesting. It's the human interactions and trials that are what keeps it interesting. The zombies are the backdrop.
Yeah,
you know?
But we can't just have zombies outside the gate and Happy Land inside.
No. Obviously, the zombies are going to have to do something.
And the,
right.
I
falling
think
from
the
ceiling, though, was kind of cool. They were, like, falling apart, some of them.
I think the idea that the dead are as dangerous, the living are as dangerous as the dead was, you know, it's always there, but it's been thoroughly examined in the last season. And so, you know, stepping away from that right now and kicking up the zombies is a way to keep it interesting. Like, having more and more human threats trying to take their prison away from them, you know, is interesting to a point, but they need a new... So Scott Gimple talked on The Talking Dead that one of the themes of this season is going to be growing up. And not just growing up for the children growing up in the apocalypse, but the idea that some of the adults have to grow up. And he specifically mentioned, you remember this, Jamie, he mentioned...
Yeah, Tyrese.
Because Tyrese is like, oh, I don't like staffing zombies on the fence. I'm going to go on the run. And then he's like, oh,
it's like
going
you
on
know
the
they're
right
dead,
center.
Right?
I don't like staffing zombies too, you know. Not that he was a whiner, but...
No.
But
you know what it's like?
Gimple described him as a teddy bear and that he's going to have to grow up. And all these people are going to have to grow up in this season.
Yeah, it's kind of like they took Tyrese's character and split him in two and created Sasha. So the badass that Tyrese was in the comics, they gave the badass part to Sasha, and all you know everything you know his I mean he doesn't like it but he's still a good fighter and you know and he's got his hammer. So it's like they split him in two and made him you know turn him into two different characters.
Mhm. Yeah. Right.
And I think by the end of this call that Jamie is going to be a zombie.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
But.
If you can hear, I'm eating cough drops, but they're not helping.
I hope you feel better soon.
I'm glad I didn't sound quite this bad when I was there, though. Sound like a frog, yes. Coughing every 2 seconds is gross. Sorry, go ahead.
But Tyrese and Michonne are two characters that are a little frustrating in that they're not, you know, okay, Tyrese is new. Michonne's been on a lot longer and is still really a mystery and not as developed. And they're two characters who are complete badasses in the comics and are like Rick's right and left hand. And so, the comic book is not a guide and these characters are not the same as they are in the comic book.
No,
right?
They're not. Definitely.
But I keep waiting for these two characters to step up and have like some awesome story. Like I'm waiting for that to happen and I'm just, you know, I can't wait to see what's going to be. I imagine that Michonne will probably meet the governor, right? Because otherwise, why do they make such a big deal that Michonne's going on the road all the time? And Daryl says to her, you know, you might meet some people who are not neighborly or other walkers, and is it really worth it? Like, is it worth it to go looking for the governor everywhere? And I think he may resurface this season, or something's going to happen to her because they made a big deal of her being out there on her own most
well,
of the
time. Well, I think they've got to wrap that up. I mean, they left it open for a reason. Whether they have to wrap
Which
it up
I
right away, I don't
why.
Know, but they got to do something. Otherwise, they wouldn't have left it like that. They would have just killed him.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially since he's on a different AMC show this year.
He is?
Why? What's he on?
Yeah,
I don't even know.
I don't know. I'm not watching. He's starring in his own show on AMC this year, though.
I think he is also still considered cast for Walking Dead this season.
Yeah, they're going to have to wrap it up at some point.
Well,
they'll have to put it back.
I guess this idea that he's out there and he's crazy and he hates them and, you know, eventually they will have to leave the prison and, you know, is he on the road or is he, you know, plotting something? I don't know. He's listed for, you know, if you believe some of the things you see on the internet, such as IMDb or other sources of casting, he's listed for several episodes this season.
Right.
So he'll show up. But you're right, Jamie. He should show up so they can put it to bed because he shouldn't be this guy that hangs around there all the you know.
Right. That's what I said. If they were going to not bring him back, I think they would have just killed him. And
yeah.
Done with it. There'd be no reason to, you know, to drag it out.
Yeah. Do you think, about Bob, this new guy, Bob. AJ, do you remember in the comic book that Bob was the guy that saved the governor's life? He's the guy who sewed him up together. And, I mean, he really – Bob's only a Woodbury character in the comic books, right? He doesn't – you know, and he's never, like, seen again or whatever. And now he's totally, like, you know, come in – his story's rewritten because they mention in the – they mention that – Daryl found him and he'd been living on his own for a while.
Right.
He possibly was never in Woodbury at all. Probably not, because the people in the prison be like, hey, Bob, it's Bob from Woodbury. How are you, Bob? Right? So
yeah.
It's a totally different backstory, which is kind of exciting. We don't have to bring any expectations. Like, I keep waiting for Michonne to, like, you know, sleep with Tyrese and do some badass things. Just don't have to have it. And he's an actual medic, I think, which is important. By the way, speaking of medics, so up till now, Herschel has been their only medic. And Herschel, like, you know, he saves Carl from a gunshot wound, and he keeps saving numerous people from all these bad things that happen to them. And then the pig gets sick, and Rick's like, I hope the pig gets better, and that's it. And, like, he's a veterinarian. They never say, like,
that's
Herschel's
true. That's
a veterinarian.
That's right. He was a veterinarian, not actually a...
Yeah, you would think the vet would be able to save the pig quicker than to save one of the people.
A person, yeah, but then he probably would have gotten infected, and they'd have to explain why he wasn't infected, maybe.
Yeah, and the pig was really, I think the pig is like an omen. Like,
yeah.
That's not a good sign that the pig just got sick and died. Like,
my first
sick
thought
and
was...
died, and then the kid does. Is there a disease? Is there a plague going around? What was your first thought?
Yeah, well, my first thought when the pig died was, well, there goes their chance at bacon.
The apocalypse is so much better with bacon.
Yes, it's better with bacon.
Yeah.
The one last thing we didn't talk about, I think we need to mention, and we can wrap it up, is the three questions. So what do you think the three questions are good for them to vet people? I mean, obviously they do more than that. But...
Oh, stupid.
Well, you think? I mean, I think they make sense. I just don't know if they're, like, the only things they need to ask. But for anybody who did miss it, it's how many zombies have you killed, how many people have you killed, and why. Maybe it's just trying to get them to be honest and admit if they've killed people. I don't know. I'm not sure how much they'd help, but...
Well, I wonder, you know, if you're alive, if you're still alive... Have you probably killed some people at this point? Like, it's going to be increasingly hard to find people who've never killed people, right? Except
that's
for,
why
like,
I wonder part of it's just to see if they'll admit it, you know what I mean? And that they're not, like, lying to them. That was my take on it.
I mean, I think
and to make sure they know how to protect themselves, too.
Yeah. I think there are three maybe decent screening questions. I mean, if you found somebody who'd never killed a zombie, that they would be lying, right? Like, is there anybody who's never killed a zombie at this point? Again,
not anybody. Not anybody that's
Looks
still
like
alive.
A kid. Yeah.
Judith hasn't killed any zombies yet, and crazy Clara. Clara. About it. But you know, I thought they were pretty good. They're pretty decent screen questions. And I thought it was kind of. I mean, that wasn't a totally. I didn't totally hate the Rick thing. I mean, I did hate Rick going on walkabout and he's got no gun and he meets this crazy lady and walks off with her. Like, it's clearly a trap. Like, we all were like, it's a trap,
yeah.
Rick. Why are you following her and you have no gun? But I did, he's got these three screen questions and they're sort of asking you about the terrible things you've done. But, you know, this woman is talking all the time about the terrible things she's done and she's like, no, I haven't killed anyone, but I hid from people who needed my help. And I did some other, you know, she talks about the things she's done.
And you'd have to do those things if you want to survive. I mean, that's
why
I said I feel
yeah.
like it's more like an admitting that they've done things. I feel like it's partially, are they willing to tell the truth? And you know what I mean? And not like then they know that they're more trustworthy or whatever. That's how I sort of took it. And like I said, they have to be able to take care of themselves. If they've never killed a zombie, they're not really going to help them much. They'll just be another mouth to feed.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, the whole point of that entire story, this episode, was leading us to the point where she said, you can't come back from the things you've done. And that's,
yeah.
you know, really about Rick
what it's about,
trying
yeah.
to, Rick's, clearly he's in some sort of, like, denial or new world where the things he's done, like, didn't happen or don't matter, and he's, like, new and improved former Rick or whatever, and you can't come back from the things you've done, and those things are going to come back, I guess, to haunt Rick.
Yeah.
He's going to have to do them again, right?
I didn't feel that the Rick storyline moved his story forward at all. I felt like it was a rehash of stuff he already knows and that we already know, and it was just shown in a different way.
Him leaving her alive at the end, you know, she's... First of all, I think her killing herself was ridiculous because she could have killed her, like, if she's so, she could have killed herself at any point in her own personal story before we've met her before, and she waits for this moment after she's had this really not that cathartic conversation with Rick where she decides to stab herself in the stomach, which is a really difficult way. Not many people
die.
Commit suicide that way. Not many people have the strength, like, and I mean, like, fortitude to do that, right? And she stabs herself in the stomach, and she died, which is just ridiculous. But then she begs Rick and says, let me change, let me be with Eddie, let me be with him, I want to be with him. Which
again,
is not the first time
not,
we've seen a character ask that.
But you know what's funny about it, though, is Rick knows that once you become a zombie, you know, I mean, she's not going to be with him, she's going to, you know,
be a zombie, right.
You know, so... I don't.
As I said, it to me made no
yeah.
sense that he let
but
her.
But doesn't that show how Rick has changed? Where Rick takes pity on her.
Well, yeah,
and that's not really
pity though. To me, that's cruelty. Because who
to
wants
Rick, it's
to
pity.
Become
to Rick,
a zombie?
I
don't care what she says. Yeah.
I mean, it's. I mean, and Jamie, you talked also about the danger. Which yes, one zombie poses no danger, but 1,000 zombies outside the fence, a herd, is a danger, and that's a reason to kill as many as you can, right?
Right.
Well, you know what? Her one zombieism, if she finds her way to the prison, she could be the zombie that pushes, you know, the weight against the fence just enough.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
that
all,
was kind
you know,
of
at some
my
point
that, that you kill what you can.
That was
yeah,
what I'm saying, yeah.
Right, but I think to Rick it's pity. Like, whatever we
right.
think, I think Rick takes pity on her and does what she has to do, and I think it shows how much Rick has changed and how much Rick is either, you know, trying to be different or in denial or whatever it is with Rick, whatever. He's still mentally not the man he was 2 seasons ago, right? And whatever
cool.
Rick does there, I think whatever Rick does there, why ever, that's not really a word, but I think maybe it's just showing us how Rick has become weak or become different. And I kind of felt like everybody at the prison was like, oh, that silly Rick, like, we'll go out on the run and get food and whatever. And Rick is like, you know, become this sort of, like...
Who he talks about.
it's sort of like, almost like he's a like a really old man, and they just sort of humor him and let him do his thing, and they all go about the business of running the place and living and taking care of themselves.
You know, it's right. Actually funny, you know, you talked about how people have to grow up to see certain people. I think Rick has to grow back up. He's digressed, you know?
Yeah.
It's like him and Carl have switched places on where they should be on the chain, and Rick needs to grow back up and realize what needs to be done and just get it done. I hope that something with Rick changes soon, because I really don't like what they're doing with Rick.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of like you want to smack him and be like, snap out of it, Rick, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
And he...
It'd be better if Carl smacked him, that'd be funny.
I mean, what he needs, he needs a good hallucination of Shane right now. That's what he needs.
Yeah. He kind of, So, I'm trying to see if I took a bunch of notes during this episode, and I was just trying to see if there's anything interesting that we missed while we were. I don't know if you guys, did we hit all the main parts?
I think we did.
Oh, you know what? I wrote a note here, and I just, you know, we were talking about how Clara says to Rick, you can't come back from the things you've done. There's a scene where Herschel actually says to Rick, he says, you came back, your boy came back, you know, you get to come back. And then I guess it's like, you know, the next scene probably where she's like, you know, you don't get to come back or whatever. I don't know, but I mean, I guess I would say, if we can predict that, maybe a theme of the season also, right?
Right.
I don't know. Jamie, you saw Talking Dead, but AJ, you missed it, right?
No, I didn't see it.
So do you remember, Jamie, Scott Gimple said the next episode, episode 2, is really intense, and that episode 3 is, like, even more intense, and things are going to get very emotionally rough in the next couple seasons. Couple episodes.
That means people are going to die.
I think so, yeah. Well, you know what?
But that's why they
brought
in all these new
people
to kill them, yeah.
That's why they had all these red shirts.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nathan Fillion said, like, anytime he sees a whole bunch of people whose names he doesn't know, that's pretty much a sign that people are going to die.
Yeah.
So people who are coming on this season include Abraham, and Rosita is coming off this season.
Yep.
Yeah, and one other. He named three people, but I'm not...
I would... I mean, I haven't heard of a casting yet, but I would have to think that Eugene's coming, too.
Yeah, I don't know who's the person that he said, but Eugene... Yeah, I mean, she's from Eugene's group, right?
Yeah, I mean, Eugene, Rosita, and Abraham all joined together.
Yeah,
so
it would have to be the three of them, maybe.
I would... Well, I mean, you know, they're changing things from the comics, but I would think that because of the... type of storyline that was there, that they, if they're, you know, if they're cast, if they've cast both of them, but then again, the fact that they've cast both of them doesn't mean that they're even going to both show up together.
Yeah. I guess maybe they might emerge. There are people who were in the,
I know, I just think it's funny because I have no idea.
There are people who were part, they actually came to the farm, right? No, they didn't come to the farm. I forget where they joined. I guess they joined the prison group, right? I forget when they came.
No, they came in. They came in after.
Well, they came on the road after they had left the prison, and they come on to Washington, right?
Yeah, they're the ones. They were. I mean, this is you know, they're headed after the prison.
They make it to Alexandria.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're comic book characters, Jamie, and and we'll see how they play out. But their presence, depending on what they do, that would tell us that maybe we're getting ready to leave the prison by the end of the season, which would be good.
Maybe
spend
I really hope they leave the prison before the end of the season.
I'm sure they will be. The one thing I wanted to mention is, do you think that Carl kind of misses his childhood a little bit? Because even though he complains to Rick, he does sneak into that group. Like, he sort of maybe wants to be involved a little bit. I mean, obviously, that's not what it was, but I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, I know.
But, I mean, he did kind of sneak in.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason for the show that they gave us. But I think for Carl, I think you're exactly right. I think there is a part of him that misses his childhood, and he snuck in to hear story time. You know, he didn't want anybody else to know because he's Mr. Badass, and, you know, he didn't want anybody to know.
Right. Okay, just really quick, I just want to say, because we do have some people in the chat. I know Christy came in a while ago, and a guest, and we now have somebody, Rod's listening page. They're asking, do you think Rick is being too sensitive? This is in regard to his reaction to the wild woman suicide in front of him. We kind of just discussed that a bit, and I know I'm definitely on the side that I don't get why he didn't kill her, and I think it was stupid that he didn't kill her. I mean, I understand and from his point of view why he didn't, but it's just another zombie that can kill somebody you care about. That's what I say. But
I think
it's just showing his changes
more
than anything.
He's being too sensitive. He's gone to, like, the total opposite end of the spectrum from where he was last year, and he needs to come back and find that medium part. Like, you can't
kill Well, at least he's not quite as nuts right now.
You can't kill every person you meet, but you can't let all those zombies survive either. And he was, considering that, who knows how much what she told him was, you know, a lie or crazy talk or whatever. I think Rick is too. I mean, I think we all prefer a somewhat more badass Rick, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Rick, I don't think Rick will ever be as crazy as.
Okay, AJ, you're going now.
He broke up. I think you mean he'll ever be as crazy as the comic book.
Yeah, that's what I said. But he's just completely opposite now. I don't understand his storyline. His storyline for a while now, it was pretty good, and it looked like he turned the corner when they saw I can't think of his name. Lenny James's character.
Morgan.
Morgan, thank you. You know, it looked like he turned the corner, and now he looks. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Andrea's death really hit him. I don't know.
Is there like a cat there in the background or something?
No, it's my son.
Oh,
your new son?
I couldn't figure out what the noise was. That's cute, though.
Oh, we have a baby crying. Everybody who's listening, AJ's baby came last week. Congratulations,
Dad.
Yeah,
cute. I heard something. I thought it was mewling with a cat. Now I have to make sense now. But anyway, let me see. What do you folks think of the governor's transformation? I think that any of them have really the potential to become like him at some point, although I think Carl more than anybody. I think
a lot of people have potential to be like that, but I think to, you know, for some people, it may have to be has to do with your personality of how you were before. Like the governor, maybe was a weaker kind of a person who, you know, there's a scene in where, you know, where he's like gonna kill Milton, and Milton's like, what would your daughter say if she, like, right before he kills Milton or stabs Milton so he becomes a zombie in the season finale, Milton says, what would your daughter think if she saw you? And the governor says, she'd be afraid of me, but if I'd been like this from the start, she'd be alive right now. And I guess where I'm going with that was, like, it Rick was an authority figure in his life. So maybe he has less, danger of, although he's pretty crazy, but I'm just wondering if the governor was sort of like a weaker guy or somebody who felt, actually I'm thinking of somebody like on Revolution where Giancarlo Esposito's character was a total wuss, and it's only when he gets the shit kicked out of himself that he starts to become this crazy, like, really mean, abusive man after the apocalypse.
Right. Well, I think also, too, though, that the governor, to some extent, lacked some certain morals at a certain point. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's why they've even said before, I could sort of see maybe, like, Carl could become that kind of leader in the future. But
do we blame the change all on Michonne, Rod? Rod.
I think he was pretty crazy before that. I think that she made it worse, but I think that he was kind of already a little off his rocker there. Well, although we said before he wasn't necessarily crazy, like he knew what he was doing. He wasn't like nuts crazy, but I think like he knew what he was doing. I just think that he wasn't doing sensible things.
I think the governor wasn't used to being challenged, and when Michonne,
right, but he obviously was. He obviously though was already putting people's heads in tanks though before that. So
Yeah, but he went completely like berserk when he just had to like get Michonne, right? And I think that he hadn't been challenged, and I think the first time
was when
she was like, when she was like, Woodbury's not that great. I want
to
get out of here. And she was like, what? Woodbury's not that great. You can't leave here. And then,
you know, I think we lost AJ. It says he dropped. Are you still here, AJ? Okay,
yeah, I'm
showing you there, but it says you dropped. Okay, that must have been from before. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just listening to you guys.
I think what's interesting to Rod's comment is that what the governor brought out in Michonne is, like, obsessed with finding him and killing him. And is it really that different from the governor being obsessed with finding and killing Michonne? I mean, I guess it's a little bit different because Michonne knows that she's got to protect herself, right? If a crazed evil stalker is looking for you in the apocalypse, maybe you should find him first and kill him. I don't know, but is she really that different?
I think for Michonne, it has a lot to do with Andrea. You know, the governor's responsible for Andrea's death. Andrea was her friend. You know, regardless of how Andrea treated her, she was still her friend, and I think she's really, I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, she can't let the governor, as much as she tried to take out the governor because she saw what he was, you know, she didn't do it, you know. Maybe she blames herself. Maybe she thinks if I just killed the governor sooner, Andrea would still be alive, you know.
Right.
So I think that has a lot to do with it, aside from the fact that she realizes that he is a big threat still being out there and he needs to be taken care of.
Yeah, but to the point that she's out doing that, but she's not home protecting her people. But to a certain extent, they're not her people. Like, it's sort of like a base that she comes back to, but they were surprised to see her, right? Like, they're like, how long are you going to stay? She's like, only a day or whatever. Like, she's not really at home there with them, and she's away a lot. But if she's out there, then she's not back at home, like, protecting the community either. Like, what if they come and attack what if the governor comes while she's away, right?
Then she missed
That'd
it,
be funny.
Yeah.
That would be funny.
Killed because she wasn't there.
Right. Let me just cut in one second. I just want to say, because in case anybody had tuned in to hear about the Sci-Fi Press tour, that as soon as we're done talking Walking Dead, I will talk about that. But we're still wrapping up Walking
Dead
a bit.
Yeah, we probably should wrap it up.
I just wanted to at least say that. Yeah, I know that Rod there was chatting, and then I like that we're getting comments, so I wanted to see that. What do you mean Maggie was killed? I missed something, I think.
I think Rod's a comic reader.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, yeah, because I was going to say, I'm like, she didn't die. I missed something. Okay.
No, she didn't die in this episode. So anyway, yeah, I guess we've thoroughly spent an hour on this, and we probably should move on.
Yeah, probably should wrap it up.
Back.
Yeah, if you still have comments, though, you can still put them in the chat, and we can stop and answer you, but we just want to somewhat try to move on, because otherwise we'll talk for 2 hours about it. tends to happen with us. We go a little overboard. Well, that being said, then, I did promise that I would talk a bit about the press tour from Sci-Fi, just because I know some people want to hear, and there's only so much you can talk on Twitter, and, you know, some of the stuff we can't put up yet or, you know, don't have done to put up and everything. But if anybody was interested, there was a couple things that I figured I'd mention and kind of what's coming to the site, I guess, in the near future.
Can you, for anybody who didn't listen, can you tell what it was that you went to Montreal and
I should explain that, I guess. This was for the Sci-Fi Digital Press Tour, that press tour. Some of the digital media was invited to go down to Montreal, and the first night we had dinner, like we always do, with some of the actors. This time it was Haven and Defiance and Ghost Hunters, and the director of Sharknado that were there, which was fun. But that's basically the kind of the pre-dinner, and then the pre-part, whatever you call it. And then on Monday we had a really long time this time, because we went to Being Human set And then we went to the Helix set, but it was kind of in three pieces, the set, because it was, like, so huge where we went. But I just thought I'd kind of, you know, mention a couple things. I'm not so sure really about the dinner. That was just kind of more or less people will see the photos. But, oh, except if you haven't watched it yet, I tweeted it. I'm going to put it on the side of the site yet. I've just been trying to catch up on everything else. But I had asked a couple of the actors to do a little kind of welcome to Sci-Fi Vision for the site, just to promote it and everything, while we were at dinner. And the men from Haven, I can't remember for sure. I think it was Eric that whispered something to the Adam and Lucas. I can't remember for sure. One of them did. But they kind of, like, sang about my site, and it's a really cool video. I thought it was so funny. Everybody was there was laughing. It was awesome. I appreciate they did that. But I gotta, it's up on YouTube, but I need to get it up on the site. So that was cool. And then the only other thing that night, which I've kind of already mentioned before on our other podcast, but I'll mention now, is I did, after the fact, talk a good bit to Jesse Rath from Defiance about Lost. He's like a huge Lost fan, so he's going to be on our, well, NDB Media's, it's not just ours, but the Lost for
it's
Lost.
It's probably the coolest part of your entire weekend.
Yeah, it was pretty cool because I just heard him say something about Lost. I'm like, what, Lost? You guys know me. And I don't know, we just sat there and talked about it. I could tell that he's, like, really into details like we are, so I think he'll be a really good person to discuss it with. I know he showed me a picture. He had, like, some Lost parties and stuff, and he had. So it was pretty cool. But anyway, that was the first night. I was really surprised this time they did, when we went to the sets, they did a lot more, I guess you'd say, like, preparation before we came there than they did before, because it being human, they had, like, tables of stuff set up, of props and things. Like, they had severed vampire heads, one of which was Mark Pellegrino, which I thought was pretty cool. they had a werewolf that was life-size. They had Sally's body from when she died at the end of the season. Actually, they had two versions of it. And a lot of that was really real. And there were some things like molds and, you know, that they'd use for prosthetics. And there was, like, little types of prosthetic things like that. Like, I know one thing said Josh's fingertips. I think it was, like, the nails and stuff, it looked like, that they put on the actors. But it was little things like that. And I thought that was really cool that they had all that set up before we even went into the set. But basically the set for Being Human that's on location at the studio is the apartment. The only thing is, and I could kick myself for this, I'm glad that Erin from Sci-Fi Mafia, I got to get the one photo off of her. We walked in, like, the doorway. But because the door was open, I never thought to take a picture of the door, you know, that has, like, the numbers on it. I'm like, why did I not do that? But that's usually, like, a location part that they add in. But basically the whole apartment, they've changed the design a lot with color scheme and stuff, with some of the things that are coming up. And I don't really want to get into spoilers or anything right now, but it looks a lot different. So we saw that in, like, the bedrooms and saw Josh and Nora's room and everything else different. The one main big, well, I don't know, people in here may not want to hear any spoilers, so I won't say this, but I put up a press release. It has a lot of kind of what's going on this season, because there's, like, kind of one big thing that's going on. It's been released, but I don't want to say it here in case people just don't want to know ahead of time. But that was that. Now, we went to Helix. They had all kinds of things set up. I mean, they had, the one thing I thought was gross that I'll still remember is they had a severed arm that I picked up and took a picture with, which was really gross and strange because it's made to, like, be the weight of one, so it feels real, but it has, like, arm hair. That was, like, what was very strange to me. But they had that, and they had, like, a head in a tank, and they had, like, just all kinds of different bodies and props and things. And they had some actors actually behind the glass in the labs, like, acting out a couple different things. There's, like, holograms and stuff. And that was really extensive, all the labs and everything that they had set up, and some different green screen sets and all that. But we saw quite a lot, and then, of course, there were Q&As for both shows, but I think Helix is going to be really cool. I mean, it's not a whole bunch that we know about it yet, but I still think it's going to be a really cool show. So, but I guess that's it. I just wanted to mention a couple things, and I'm going to have more up about it on Sci-Fi Vision, you know, if other people want to want to hear about it or read about it later. I think Rod got bored. He left. But anyway, so that's
man.
All coming.
That's
no,
we'll
I know.
Next week.
Yeah. Yep. Hopefully. But yeah. But that was about it. It was a lot of fun as always, and I'll have lots of stuff up. But and then of course I still have the stuff from the Defiance and Warehouse 13 sets. It'll be coming up, but some of that can't be like a lot of it's embargoed and stuff till later. So, but that's the gist of it. So it was a lot of fun. That's basically the main thing.
Cool. So I can't wait to. Yeah, it sounds great.
Yep.
Sounds like a really
a fun.
Good time.
Yeah. It was. Unfortunately, I got sick on the plane. I think I got picked up something.
Planes are. Yeah, germy places.
Yeah. I was going to say, I also am going to be putting up a preview review of this week's Haven coming up because we got the screener. And just a comment about Haven, what's happened so far, not even the new one, but I'm surprised that she's got her memory back fairly quickly, that Audrey does, as I thought they were going to either drag it out really long or make it that she would be part of, like, more than one person or something and maybe not completely remember, but you find out at the end of last week's episode because Duke figures it out. But the next episode, it clears up some more things, and it's got a lot of shocks in it. But. So that's coming up. Now, what show, I don't want to keep talking about that forever, what show do you guys want to, and there are, I was just going to say for the press tour, there's a lot of, if you go to my tweets, you'll see a lot of photos and stuff I already put up.
Cool.
Before we get started on the show, I just wanted to mention the Lost alumni this week. For those of you that didn't hear our Lost for Lost, Jorge Garcia was on Hawaii Five-O, and it was really funny because, as I mentioned, Saturday night, him and Dental Day Kim have this conversation because they're childhood friends about how they went to band camp together, and Jorge says, "Remember how intense that camp was?" And Kim says, "Yeah, it was like we were stuck on a deserted island all summer," which was definitely a lost shout out. Did you see the episode yet?
No, I haven't.
All right, well, so this is for Jamie then. Jorge's character is very conspiracy theory type, and he doesn't leave the house, and he JFK and Roswell, and any conspiracy, you name it, he's like. The expert on it and everything. Then they go to the character for help with something. But they figure something out, and he goes, "Holy Fox Mulder." And then Scott Kahn's character, Dano, he's very pessimistic, and he's like, you guys don't actually believe this stuff and everything, and Jorge just stops. It was a great scene. He just stops, kind of looks at him, and he's like, "What?" And he goes, "You're totally my Scully."
I have to make sure I watch that to get it off on demand.
So,
all right.
Moving on.
Yep, moving on. Do you want to go to Sleepy Hollow next? Because I have a feeling
sure,
the way my foot keeps feeling like coughing, my voice is going to get worse. Okay,
yeah.
So I'm trying to get here. So this episode was with her sister, and it's about...
You slept through last week.
No, I didn't. It's just I watched them close together. That's why. This is
Roanoke.
The one with Roanoke, yes. Which, okay, first of all, I would think if you watched any sci-fi, you would know way before they explained what it is, it was Roanoke. I mean, that was kind of duh. But yeah, it's about a boy who comes from Roanoke. And he, because of the demon, or not the demon, the horseman of pestilence, everybody in that little, in the town of Roanoke is, like, infected, and he brings it to the live people. Because you find out at the end, I think the twist at the end was interesting, that it ends up, you find out that here he was dead the whole time. That it was when he came into the woods or whatever that he became flesh and blood, and, like, basically he infected everybody, and they don't want to let, they already have the, and it says the other horseman's coming back, too, the death one, so they don't want to let in pestilence. And that's pretty much what the whole episode's about. And it looks like they might be going to change his clothes and stuff. Those are the main things I got out of it.
Cool.
Sorry.
you might have the black vein. If you don't have zombieism, maybe you have the black vein.
I got something going on. That's why I told them there. I said, this is not my real voice, I swear. Because every time I talk to somebody, I sound like this lately.
Yeah.
So we also find out, I was going to say, the other thing is that Katrina's in some kind of, help me out with the words, I can't think of what it,
purgatory.
I couldn't think of the word. She was in sort of purgatory, yeah. And she didn't get to finish telling him why or anything, but he had to be sort of part dead in order to actually talk to her on his own and go there.
Yeah.
What I like the most is, you know, here's another fun history lesson explanation type thing. You know, last week we had the Boston Tea Party, why it was disguised that way, and now we have, you know, another explanation, you know, with Roanoke, you know, which that's what I like the most about the show is when they bring real life history into it and give kooky explanations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes it interesting. I do like that. But I still don't quite buy that her boss would believe her enough to let her take them out of quarantine. Because she could be right, but if she's wrong, he could have, like, killed hundreds of people. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I had a little trouble believing that. I did like that the people that work for him are, like, definitely questioning, like, why is he letting them do this? At least that was good. But that ex-boyfriend character is still annoying me, so.
Yeah, I think they introduced him quickly so that he's going to be a thorn in the side of something. I foresee his future as him being so suspicious and jealous of Crane that he's going to end up doing something to get somebody else hurt, and he's going to, oops.
Yeah, I felt like once again he was forced on us. Like, I felt like once again Orlando Jones had to be like, you're her ex-boyfriend, right? Like,
yeah, and even like, his friend is like, get over it. That's what I was thinking. And it's essentially what he said to him, you know, just forget about it.
And it's a little bit difficult to swallow because being put on us after the fact, like we don't have any experience, you know. Bless you, Jamie. The show never had them together, so we have to take Orlando Jones' word for it that they had a relationship that would make him jealous. Like, we don't have anything to go on that he's a psycho,
right.
That he's so jealous that he's going to cause trouble. And he seems actually, he's a personable actor and actually, like, a nice enough guy on the show. He's not, I don't know, it's a little
difficult.
The character
doesn't, it's out of place. It just, there's something about it.
It continues to feel forced.
Because, I even like the scene with his friend where his friend's like, he's like, he goes, what do you care? You know, he's like, you know, basically we said, get over it. He's like, I thought we were going to, you know, going to go to the NYPD. You know, it was kind of like, this is Sleepy Hollow. This is not where people go to die. You know, this is not where they live their wild fantasy life out, you know?
Yeah. The whole, like, part in Roanoke, I mean, I like bringing in the Lost Colony of Roanoke, and I kind of enjoy the part
really
where
cool.
I like how they're bringing in history every week. The whole, at the end part where Abby is like, well, first of all, I'm not surprised that they have made the horsemen be pestilence. I've been waiting for that. You know, you're the four horsemen in the Bible. Pestilence is not really one of the horsemen. You know how they say in it, sometimes known as conquest, he's pestilence, sometimes known as conquest. Like, in the Bible, that horseman is the horseman of, like, military conquest, the idea that, like, he brings war and oppression or whatever, I guess. But in popular culture, that has become the horse of pestilence. And that's the more common, the more popular idea is that the four horsemen are
pestilence. That's kind of funny because you would think they would go by the, like, true idea. I think it would make more sense, but most people don't know that. So,
Bible.
Well, for this thing,
I figure they go with pestilence because, first of all, it's easier to.
I've heard of them it being said that way before too, so I guess it's just more popular culture. But yeah, it does work.
It's easier. It works more easily, and that's what more people popularly know the Four Horsemen as, right? So, I wasn't surprised.
It's actually funny, you know, you talk about the Four Horsemen because I've heard there's probably three or four different versions combined that I've heard of them as the, you know, Four Horsemen. The most common actually that I've ever heard was Time, pestilence, famine, and death.
I was going to say, I've heard of famine and death, but I don't know about time.
War.
What is the other one usually then? Death, pestilence, or whichever?
War and
famine,
death.
Famine, pestilence, and death.
Oh, war.
Yeah.
Okay, war separate. Okay.
Yeah.
But war and conquest are kind of different in the Bible. Like, war is sort of like actual war, right? The Red Horse's War, which is more like the slaughter and death that occurs with war, whereas the Horse of Conquest is more like the idea of like a military, like,
right,
occupation, like type of conquering, right?
Yeah, I think that pestilence is probably easier to do too.
And that,
like,
and that is the horse
is,
that is thought of often. The White Horse is the one they say is the Antichrist. But whatever, the show is not going so biblical with that. I thought that the storyline with the plague and all that and Lost Colony of Roanoke was kind of cool. Where they started to lose me was near the end, where Abby, like, I was like, oh, well, if we take the kid out of the hospital and go back, water and many religions and, you know, and the water will cure me. Like, I felt like that came kind of easily.
Out of nowhere?
I don't know.
Yeah,
see, I kind
of
thought
nowhere.
It
I agree.
At first. I kind of thought at first that it was more like, I don't know, metaphorical thing, like the fact that, you know, people in different, sometimes in different, that grow up in different places, like they just always said, like, he had different immunities, and then maybe, like, because they normally drank that water, like, it was what protected them or something, but then it was like, no, we're gonna, you know, baptize him or something. Yeah, it was kind of odd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that came a little bit easily, and I was starting to get a little annoyed, and I was like, wait a minute, it's Sleepy Hollow. Don't question it. Don't, like, you know, this is a show that we sort of just go with it and accept it. It was
yeah,
actually...
it's not all rooted in history, obviously.
Yeah. It was actually a little more difficult for me to believe that Ichabod speaks fluent Middle English.
That was convenient.
You know, at first I couldn't understand anything, and I'm like, that's Middle English, but then after I started listening, if you pay attention, you can understand most of it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
At the beginning, I didn't know what the heck they were saying, so.
Well, yeah, it was actually funny, because when he first said it, and he's like, he's speaking the same language we do, and I had the same reaction. I'm like, really? I'm like, when did, you know,
well,
and then
I don't
when,
know.
Once he
said, I could start understanding things after a while when I kept watching,
as
I'm
soon
like,
as,
oh, wait. They just say
as
things
soon as
weird.
He, yeah, as soon as he said it was Middle English, I was like, oh. I was like, all right. I was like, another little history lesson.
Well, and look, I totally buy that as a literary scholar, you know, that as a professor of literature or whatever he was a professor of in the 1700s, that he would be able to read the Canterbury Tales. And, I mean, I have a friend who went to Oxford, and she read the Canterbury Tales in the original Middle English, and I believe that he could read it and translate it. Do I believe that he can full-on speak it to a person? Like, I mean, I know a lot of people who can read and write Latin. I don't know that they full-on can have a conversation with somebody from the past who shows up, right? To me, that was like,
that's to me just kind of like suspension of disbelief. Like, you don't know that he necessarily talked it fluently. He talked it enough to talk with them, but when they make it, they're going to make it sound right. You know what I mean? That's more how I would.
Yeah.
That kind of thing doesn't bother me.
Yeah. So that was all, but you know, he's a Ichabod Crane, and he also has a photographic memory, so maybe he can.
Oh, that's true too. Yeah, he probably could then.
Yeah,
this is,
very
true.
You know, I did see a moment there. So, you know, I complained a little bit last week that the guy only has one outfit that he wears all the time, and this week he was like, "Do I look out of place?"
Yeah, they're talking about it.
Maybe you should get some more clothes. So I was like,
it was a total shout out.
Dude's gonna get some clothes next week.
Shout out to the fans.
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't cut his hair. I like it like that.
I agree. I think he loses his mystique if he cuts the hair. The clothes, he might
be
able to do something, but you cut the hair.
Shaving,
just,
I think, would probably do the same thing as the hair, although the shaving, I don't know that I care as much. But yeah, they're probably going to do something with it.
what do you think about the part where Ichabod went into purgatory and, like, kind of was physically with Katrina there?
Well, he's supposed to be almost dead. So I kind of get it. I don't know that it completely made sense, but, I mean, I bought it,
I guess. Yeah, I mean, if he was that close to death, I don't think he would have been walking through the forest helping Tom.
Yeah, he like fought his way back from purgatory or whatever.
I don't know. I felt if you want to give him the dream state again with Katrina, that's one thing. But to actually put him in physical form with her, I felt that was, I didn't like that.
Right. I just think it was more saying, trying to show that he was that close to death. That's why I said I bought it. I don't know if it made total sense, but I mean, I didn't really think much about it when it happened.
Yeah, I mean, to me, my least favorite part of the show are the scenes with Katrina. Only because I don't like her as this sort of deus ex machina type thing that at any time they need information, Ichabod sees her in his sleep and she gives him critical information they need. And I think that's a bit of a storytelling crutch, maybe, and I just don't like that she's like this sort of walking code that. Oh, Jamie.
Sorry.
I just don't like that she appears at critical moments and gives them information that there's no way they could possibly know any other way. That's why it's one of my least favorite parts of it, I think. Sounds like maybe you guys are not 100% down with the idea either that she just appears and is like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it, but I do agree with what you're saying. It's kind of like that's their device they use. Although there are worse ways to give exposition. I mean, it's not a boring exposition. Like, it's better than them explaining it again. You know what I mean?
But it's more than exposition, because it's like every time they're like, how do we figure this out? Hold on, let me go to sleep. Oh, Katrina said.
Yeah.
That's the problem with it.
I kind of prefer the Buffy the Vampire Slayer or the Warehouse 13 model, where they retreat to this library of ancient books and they look stuff up at least. Which is a little more.
Like just go to the cabin or something and find information you didn't know that was there.
There you go. I want to see that. That's something they need to incorporate in the show. I want to see that when they need information and they go to a library and Ichabod starts going for the card catalog and she's like, yeah, we have the internet over here. And he's like, oh, what? The
interwebs. They even have a library with card catalog back then? I don't know.
Yeah.
They probably didn't even have it. I don't know. They might have. I have no idea. I'm asking.
I don't know. I don't know either.
I don't know if there was necessarily a card catalog, but there was definitely some sort of something along those lines.
Yeah. I think that it was a little, I don't know. This was not, I mean, I don't think this was bad, but I think of all the episodes so far, this one is maybe not as strong. It might be also because the monster wasn't that scary. Like it was the disease, but we barely saw the Horseman of Pestilence, and he was only around for, like, you know, half an hour, and then he was vanquished and disappeared or whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of like when they make the main character sick, you know they're going to fix everybody. That was the other thing. There was, like, no threat, in a sense. Yeah, I liked last week's better, but there's still awesome effects. I still love the look of the show. I can't help it. That's what I always think when I watch this. I always notice just the way, I don't know, like the dreamy quality it gets. I really do like that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's visually interesting and well shot and pretty well done and with a decent budget for special effects.
Right.
Not for nothing, guys. I just looked at the clock and it's 11:30 and we've only talked about Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
All right, we'll wrap it up, but I don't know. I guess the break is not on for three weeks. I guess that's because Fox airs the World Series, right? Which is why we're not getting any.
But we got a hell of a comeback, don't we?
John Noble is coming.
That's an awesome. And he's going to be a Sin Eater. I'm assuming that's going to be like other legends and stuff of the Sin Eater. I've like seen stories about that before and thought it was kind of an interesting idea.
Yeah.
So, that'd be cool.
And James Frain is coming also. I mean, we have, like, all these excellent...
Yeah.
James Frain is from The Tudors, but he's on Grimm also. He plays Renard's brother on Grimm, which is probably where he's most familiar to people.
He was on True Blood also.
So he's going to be great. And
what do you play in True Blood?
And John Noble.
He was that crazy guy that was, like, obsessed with Tara.
Oh, him. Okay. See, I didn't, until you said that, now I know who you mean exactly. Okay.
Yeah, he's that. So that should be great. But you're right. We need to. We spent a lot of time on The Walking Dead. We probably should keep moving on, right?
Yeah. Let me. One thing I want to mention, and then I'm probably just going to listen because it's just hurt my throat anyway. But plus, I haven't seen the other stuff. But I did want to mention before I forget. I'm hoping to get them up tonight if I don't get off too late and I'm still awake. But I'm going to have another giveaway. It's for Primeval, the complete series. The well. Wasn't originally sci-fi, but the one that was optioned by sci-fi, the Canadian one. So we have three of those to give away on Sci-Fi Vision. So there's that.
Great. Cool.
I just want to mention that. All right. You guys go for it. I'll listen. I probably won't have much to add.
Did I want to ask real quick. Did any of you guys watch Coven?
Yes,
no, I did not. That show's too scary for me. I don't intend to.
Oh, it was... awesome. I loved it. And my favorite parts were Jessica Lange jamming out to Inigo the DeVita. And
yeah.
Then she said, yep. And then, I can't think of the actress's name or the character's name, but the woman that plays her daughter says, I don't have a broom after Jessica Lange breaks something. And Jessica Lange says, that's ironic. And later they're having an argument and Jessica Lange says to her, don't make me drop a house on you.
Oh yeah, they had all these great.
So lots of witch jokes in it, but it was just awesome.
So this one, seeing the previews, I think the witch one looks good, but I don't know. After hearing what everybody said about the other seasons and that it's too intense, scary for me. I don't think I could watch it if it's anything like the other seasons were.
I actually found this first episode not as intensely frightening. I found the opening sequence with Kathy Bates to be pretty disturbing, where she has perpetrated some incredible abuse upon the slaves that worked for her back in 1700s or 1800s.
Yeah.
That was a little disturbing.
Yeah, well, she's portraying an actual person in history.
I know.
Which makes it more disturbing.
That was a little disturbing, but I found the part with the teenage witches to be not yet so far creepy, not nearly as twisted as some of, I mean, we know it will go a twisted route. And I'm looking forward to seeing Jessica Lange and Kathy Bates compete with each other to see who can chew up the most scenery. Because while they are both excellent actresses, they both can go over the top when the situation calls for it.
And let's not forget Angela Bassett's in the show, too.
Yes. I mean, this is like the Battle of the Divas.
Yeah.
And
Angela Bassett's character is black magic, so.
Mm-hmm. It was pretty good so far.
It looks fun. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a fun season.
Yeah.
All
right, Revolution. Which
I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch it?
I forgot about it.
All right, well, then we won't talk about it since you guys both missed it. We can.
Yeah, we both missed it.
I missed it, but I didn't forget. I just didn't have time.
It was pretty good.
I do want to catch up on it, though.
I think the pacing is faster. Like, this week, they resolved that whole storyline with the creepy guy who's keeping his wife chained to a bed and all that stuff. And I mean, that got resolved pretty quick.
I didn't see that part yet.
And the part with Nathan and his father. Giancarlo Esposito's character that advanced pretty quickly this week also. And it's a little darker, which I like also. I think we were all expecting a darker show. So I think you guys should watch it and then we'll catch up.
Yeah, I just forgot about it. I had a lot going on the past 2 weeks.
That's cool. I know you did. I think a new baby will throw a kink into your TV viewing schedule.
Yeah. Do you see Revenge, Karen?
I did see Revenge.
So you think they're gonna? So Margot, I guess, is the new player in the ever-going saga of who's gonna sleep with who.
My favorite part of this episode was when I watched the coming attractions, and the voiceover says the Hamptons' hottest love rhombus.
Yes, that was pretty funny.
It's not a triangle. It's not a quadrangle.
The rhombus.
It's a rhombus.
It's a rhombus.
That is funny.
I'm glad they resolved with, I gotta say, for the beginning part of the episode, I was not sure whether Aiden was good or bad for a minute there.
I figured it out at the party. It was very obviously a setup.
Yeah.
That's when I was sure what was going on.
Yeah, and then when he sits down with Madeline Stowe, and he's like, "Oh, I was wrong. Sorry, this guy didn't steal. Oh, whatever. Bye."
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. Like, that was really obvious there, also.
Yeah.
The one I can't figure out is Patrick, the new Victoria's new son.
Yeah, I don't know what his deal is. I don't understand why he's
jerk. First of all, he's a total jerk.
Yeah, pretty much.
And whether or not he's working for Emily, working for someone on his own. Is he her son? Is he a con artist? Is he in with somebody else? Is he, like, who knows, right? That guy is hard to figure out right now.
I don't understand why he's being such a jerk. You know, it's like you spend the summer with Madeline Stowe and all of a sudden everybody else is, you know, you're like supreme. So I guess that's how it works. As usual, Nolan is probably the best part of the show, though. I love when he was talking about the swimming with the dolphins. He goes, "I don't want you to build SeaWorld. I just want, like, five or six dolphins for people to swim with."
Yeah, although that outfit was a glamour don't. That was the worst costume he's ever worn. What's with tweeded pants, man? He looked really bad.
You know, actually, it's funny. On TV.com, whoever writes the article praises their bold choices with him every week.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was,
I gotta say,
that
though,
was a bad choice this week. But
I gotta say, I liked the Nolan Ross jail T-shirt. That was awesome.
That was awesome. I want to buy that T-shirt.
They're available. There's four different versions available for sale. If you were to go to abc.com and, like, go to the Revenge Shop, they're available online. Yep.
Jamie, this character got arrested last year and was wearing, like, a T-shirt with his own
mugshot.
With his own mugshot on it.
All right. Kind of odd, but okay.
And it's funny because a character says how he's so ashamed, and the next episode they're like, "Really? He's not ashamed at all." I guess I kind of like where it's going, AJ, and that, you know, Emily's sort of wondering if she should, you know, the way that she feels bad about ruining the priest's life. And then how about how it ends, where, first of all, you know
he's dead. You knew the priest was going to die the minute he says that if Conrad doesn't confess, I will. And I'm like, oh, he's dead, because we're only three episodes into the season, you know. I think the question I have is Conrad full of crap? Like, he has that big scene with Victoria, and she's like, you know, if you do this, you'll regret it and everything. And then, you know, Emily comes upon the car, which, you know, is on fire, and it's crashed, and the priest is laying on the ground dead, and Grayson comes up, and he's, you know, kind of bloody, but I think he's in pretty damn good shape for just being in that horrific car accident in that coffin on wheels. I feel like Conrad, like, he's been full of shit this whole time. Like,
I mean, you saw the accident, the way he crashed. He crashed that Ferrari right into a pole, right? And you could see how the car was destroyed. And he didn't do it on purpose, because he wouldn't walk away from it. I mean, it was really a...
Well, that's what I'm getting at. I'm almost wondering if he did. There's a part of me that wonders if...
He could. He could do that on purpose and guarantee that he'd walk away from it. I don't think Conrad... I'm more inclined to believe that possibly... somebody, like, did Victoria run him off the road, or did, I don't know, but somehow, I mean,
well,
that something else happened to run him off the road.
I'll say one thing for Father Paul, you just chalk him up to one more person on Emily's list of oopsies. Like, think about how many people have died because of Emily's revenge scheme.
Well, some of them she's happy. I mean, he's the first one she's sorry that he died.
There's been not just dying. I mean, there's been innocent people. Like, I mean, look at poor Nolan. The guy went to jail because of her.
Only for 6 months.
He still went to
jail. You go to jail
Nolan,
for 6 months
listen,
for somebody?
I realize Nolan is bisexual, but he's too damn pretty to be in jail for 6 months. So I'm surprised he made it out one piece.
He's been in jail before, right? He met her father in jail.
No, he went to see her father in jail.
He met her father in jail. Anyway, whatever.
I thought he met him in jail, too, but it's been so long, and that was I didn't see very much, so.
Anyway, it was an okay episode. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
Things are getting pretty, I don't like Aiden. I kind of actually like Aiden better when he was working against Emily than working for her, but it was
pretty
awesome.
But you know what? But again, like we both said, if he was really working against Emily, he outs her as Amanda. It was fairly well done, but still pretty obvious that they were working together.
Mm-hmm. So, anything else we got to talk about this week?
Did you watch anybody? S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I went to see Gravity tonight, you guys. You have got to go see this movie.
Yeah, I want to see that.
It really, so you know what it's about. It's Sandra Bullock, Lost in Space movie.
Basically.
It's visually, it's incredible. I've never seen a movie like this.
I haven't seen it yet, obviously, but would I be correct in saying it's kind of like Castaway in outer space?
No. Yes and no. I mean, yes, in that there's basically one person in this movie. I mean, George Clooney's in the movie, but he's definitely a supporting character. He's not in it very much, and this is Sandra Bullock's movie. And she's in every single scene, and it's about her. So in that sense, it's similar to Castaway. It's very
which
different
is funny,
in that.
Because you know what's funny is he's got George Clooney has top billing on the movie.
This is Sandra Bullock's movie every step of the way. And Jamie, I know it doesn't sound like your type of movie, but it's about they're out in space and an accident happens and Sandra Bullock goes drifting away and
right. I'm not always big in, I guess not exactly a disaster movie, but, I'm assuming that most of the movie is, her trying to get back. It's all about her floating around and being alone, and I don't know. To me, it just doesn't sound...
Visually, as an artist, Jamie, you might like it. Visually, this movie is unbelievable. I've never seen anything that looks like this. First of all, I hate all 3D, and you've got to see this movie in 3D, and
I'm sure it's
space.
Gorgeous. I mean, I think it would be.
She's in space, but the visual effects of showing the planet Earth and space behind her and all, and so much of this movie is she's in a spacesuit the whole time. So the movie, not the whole time, but or a space capsule, right? So the movie is very claustrophobic, and it's all right up in Sandra Bullock's face all the time, and it's so beautifully shot, and the scenes where she's floating through the cat. I mean, it's just incredible. It's gonna be nominated for and maybe win every single visual effects Oscar. It's incredible. And the Sandra Bullock's work in it, is it the best work of any actress this year? I don't know. That remains to be seen. A lot of movies are going to come out between now and December. But clearly she had to work very hard, and it was clearly physically demanding. And it's such an intense story about whether or not she's going to live or die. And it's not my type of movie either. It's excellent. And I think you should check it out. And if it's not your type of movie, Jamie, maybe check it out for the matinee or for a discount or whatever. But I think as a person who as an artist and a photographer, you might really enjoy the incredible visuals of the movie.
Yeah, I'm sure it's gorgeous.
And I hate 3D, and I never even for a second was distracted by the glasses on my face. It's really good. I really recommend it.
Cool.
Yeah,
I was planning on seeing it if I had a chance.
It's not really sci-fi. It's a little, it's not sci-fi. It's just space.
It's space.
I think that in the movie, the technology is a little bit more advanced than what our astronauts actually really have. But it's really, I really recommend it. And I never come on here and talk about movies that I say you guys have to see, but I really think people should check it out. And it's the kind of movie that you definitely don't want to see on that little screen and have Sandra Bullock's giant facing up your... you don't want to see it on the TV. This movie should be seen on the big screen.
Got it.
So anyway, I was watching that instead of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so I didn't see it.
Then we won't discuss it, but they did get picked up for a full season.
It did, huh?
Yep.
Oh, well, that's kind of not a surprise, I guess, with the incredible amount of money they're spending on it and the really good audience they've had for the first couple weeks.
Yeah.
The only thing I was telling you guys, I watched Once Upon a Time in Wonderland this week, the new Once Upon a Time show.
Yeah, I watched the pilot too.
Yeah, I've never watched the original Once Upon a Time. I just thought I'd watch this pilot. And as I wrote you guys on email, I didn't know that Tom from Being Human was in it.
Yeah, I heard he was in it.
Right, that's what I was talking about last week, and the fact that some Lost people work on it too.
Yeah. I didn't particularly, I mean, Tom's on That's Not Your Thing, it's just not my thing, and I'm not going to watch it anymore. I just tuned in out of curiosity. For me, fantasy, particularly,
yeah,
like
fantasy more, I know.
And this show has full-on animated White Rabbit and Cheshire Cat and, like, full-on animation in it. So it's just not really, you know, Naveen Andrews flying around on an actual flying carpet. It's just not really my kind of thing.
I liked it, but I get what you mean. It's more,
I love the commercials.
I like that kind of stuff. So.
I love the commercials because the commercials are totally trying to draw on Naveen Andrews' popularity from Lost, because the commercials even say starring Naveen Andrews from Lost.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And in the pilot, he didn't have a lot of screen time, but he appears to be the major villain.
Yeah.
And of course, the White Rabbit.
I want to know what
Rabbit
Jafar is doing
like,
in Wonderland.
What?
I said, I want to know what Jafar is doing in Wonderland.
Yeah, really. He's Jafar on a... Jafar is not supposed to be, like... I mean, he's not any part of the Wonderland universe.
And
but,
that's the other thing. Is that, like, an actual character from fantasy? I thought that was, like, a Disney creation. Maybe I'm wrong, but I didn't even realize that was, like, from, you know, like, story.
Yeah, Jafar,
they could
from,
even
like,
take
the Jafar is from
Aladdin.
He's from Aladdin.
Yeah, but is it from the original Aladdin? I don't know why I thought that it was just Disney Aladdin for some reason. But, I mean, they own Disney anyway, so it doesn't matter. But okay, I just was curious. I don't know why I didn't think it was.
Now, was he in The Thousand and One Nights? I think he is an actual character from The Thousand and One Nights, yes. I don't know that story very well, but I think he's an actual... I think he's the name of the actual person that finds the lamp in The Thousand and One Nights. But, you know, I think a lot of people might watch it also. The White Rabbit is voiced by John Lithgow. To me, it's just not really my thing. But I think, you know, like Jamie, you like fantasy, and people who like, you know, it is a very, I mean, it's a much more edgy Alice than your typical Alice in Wonderland. Like, this is an Alice who can fight with a sword and who wears, like, combat boots with her little 18th century dress and is a very, you know, much more modern version of the Alice.
Well, Tim Burton's Alice was pretty badass. She was
it does kind of remind me a little bit of that.
Yeah, I didn't see it, but you know, so I can see why people would. Like, it's just not my thing, and it's also basically.
Excuse me.
About a girl trying to find her lost love, which another thing is not maybe what I watch. So I give it a shot. I think some people would like it. It's just not my thing.
Right.
But, you know, like, for fantasy fans or whatever, or animation fans, check it out. So, I don't know if anything else was on this week that you guys checked out.
I think that's it.
All right. Then
sounds, maybe, we're a wrap.
We're a wrap?
Sounds that way.
We're a wrap. Yeah, I can't really think of anything else to mention either. So. All
right.
So I guess, as always, it's
AJ,
Saturday night.
Jamie, get some sleep and feel better. AJ, are you getting any sleep at all?
Yeah, he was home yesterday for the first time, so he wasn't too bad.
Well,
He's been good so far.
Good. Getting you plenty. Well, he knows that he's got to give you plenty of time to watch TV and talk to us. So, all right. Well, so this weekend I told you guys for Lost, I don't know if I can be there. I'm going fake camping.
Which is ironic.
Yeah.
I don't mean the camping part. I just mean the fact that your favorite episodes, and you're not going to be there to discuss them.
Yeah, my favorite episodes are Lost, and I won't be able to be there.
Yeah.
But I'm going to send you a full commentary that you can read all of my insightful thoughts into the podcast.
There you go. Send me an email. I'll reiterate them on air for you.
Aaron's
dead.
So good. Jerry can join the two of you this weekend on Lost for Lost, and we'll be back next Tuesday with the regular stuff, right?
Yep.
Regular Phantom Access.
Yep, we'll be back next Tuesday for Walking Dead again and everything else. So.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for those who came to the chat and for giving us good questions and things to think about, too. And we'll be back. So, and as always, you can download the episode in its entirety after we hang up here. All right, guys.
Okay.
Well, good night.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.